So hello everyone, welcome to this week's W3C CCG meeting. This week our main agenda, we'll have Mark and David kind of present on the evidence property. But before we get to the main agenda, we'll just do some admin stuff first. So first of all, just a quick reminder about the code of ethics and professional conduct. Basically, just make sure that we don't yell at each other and be respectful to each other's perspectives and opinions. I think we've been doing that for as long as I remember, but just want to do a quick reminder on that. Now, a quick IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be a member of the CCG with a full IPR agreement signed. So make sure you have a W3C account, and if you have any questions, feel free to just reach out to any of the co-chairs. All right, the meetings are being recorded, and there will be minutes that's automatically transcribed and sent out in the next few days. And we use GT Chat to cue speakers during the call, as well as to take minutes. So you can type in Q plus to add yourself to the queue, Q minus to remove, and Q question to see who's in the queue. All right, so any introductions or reintroductions? If you are new to the community or you have been inactive or re-engaging with the community, please feel free to kind of unmute and introduce yourself a little bit.
It's Mark Cain here.
Hi, Mark. Yeah.
Hi. This is my my first session. I thought I'd introduce myself. I've been much more active on the OpenID Foundation side of things, where I co-chair a working group over there. I live in the UK, and I've been active in solution architecture, particularly around security and networks. In financial services. That's probably sufficient. I'm an independent consultant. I've got a number of parallel activities going on there, but probably most notably is that I'm currently contracted to work for the OpenID Foundation about 50% of my time.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. And thank you for taking the time to join our meeting today as well.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
perhaps I should reintroduce myself because my status has just changed. Prior to this month, I was the R&D director at Crossword Cybersecurity. But I no longer work for them, now an independent consultant. And so that's my change of status.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Yeah, so I think one of the goals that we set out earlier this year is to have more cross-community collaborations. So very, very happy to have Mark. And also David has been active in OpenID Foundation as well. So very happy to have Mark here, and we'll have more meetings with OpenID folks to talk about the initiatives that they're working on over there, as well as the DIF, Decentralized Identity Foundation. All right, any other introductions or reintroductions? Okay, what about announcements and reminders? Manu, please.
Yeah, just an update from IETF 116, which is happening this week. We presented some of the work that this group has been working on for a couple of years, specifically the multi-formats work, including multi-base and multi-hash. We presented this at a group called Dispatch. And Dispatch's job is to find a home for work that people bring to the IETF. There were 150 to 160 people in attendance, 136 on the chat, possibly, you know, 30 to 50 people in the room. So really well attended, as is most dispatch meetings. It was the first meeting of the week, so lots of people there. So the good news is that the dispatch folks, including the area directors, have decided that the work is useful, and it should be done at ITF. They have given us two choices. So let me get a here's the dispatch outcome for multi-formats. Dispatch outcome for multi-formats. So there's a, they basically said, gave us two options. One of them is a straight to mini working group thing. So that's, we were not expecting that. We were suggesting that maybe some area directors could sponsor the work and we could make progress there. The area directors are very busy, and a number of the, area directors said that, ITF should get into the practice of doing fast turnaround, working groups. And so one of the options put forward was a mini working group. The other option is a straight to ISC track, which basically says, if we're not looking for changes or reviews, go ahead. You know, we'd be just documenting what already exists. Since the work already has like 17 implementations and has been out in the market and is deployed in production systems and all that kind of stuff, they said the ISC track is a valid one as well. So feel free to follow along in the email thread I just linked to there. If you want to see the slide deck that was presented, I'll put that in the chat channel here. There's the slide deck that was presented. The stuff this community is going to have to get its head around is whether or not we want a working group at ITF, or if we want to go the ISC route. I'm slightly leaning towards a little mini working group, because it would be good to get ITF's review on this work. That always comes with risks, like the people that join the working group might decide that they really do not like the work and want to change it drastically. That happens sometimes. And so we just have to go in with that understanding. The problem, of course, being that there are already 17 implementers and people have already implemented this thing. So we would have to convince many of those implementers to change their implementations if we saw big changes happen there. All that to say, this is great news, we can look forward to, you know, two of these things progressing through the ITF process over the next couple of months to a year. That's it.
Thank you, Manu. Kalia?
Hi, folks. So the Internet Identity Workshop is coming up in April. The 18th to the 20th, we are likely to sell out again. So if you are planning on being there, please buy your tickets as soon as possible. I'll also share, we're really committed to accessibility. So if you want to be there and can't afford ticket prices, please reach out. I'll put my email in the chat. And then more importantly, if you are in Europe are interested in participating in community processes like IAW, good news is we're bringing with local partners in Switzerland the Digital Identity on Conference Europe to Zurich, June 7 to 9, with the 8th and 9th being Open Space Technology Days, the format we use at IIW. The first day, half day, we'll have one-to-many talks that are sort of introductory and supporting people getting up to speed. So I will also put the link for that in chat, and if you are in Europe or work with people in Europe, if you could please let them know about it and encourage them to consider participating, that would be really great. Thank you.
Thanks, Clea. Yeah, so we won't have the meeting on the April 18th on the week of IIW. So if you're available, just join the IIW at the Mountain View. All right, a quick overview of what's coming. So next week, we will actually we invited Dan Yamamoto Kazue to talk about the Link database, verifiable credentials with selected disclosures on linkability and predicate proofs. And the week after that, on April 11th, we'll have holder binding. We canceled the April 18th meeting due to IIW, and then after that, we'll have Gail from OpenID Foundation to talk about what they're working on. So I'll paste the link to the agenda in the chat. All right, any other announcements or reminders? All right, next, what about any comments or updates on the work items? Manu, please.
I'm just saying this because the work item leaders aren't here. So BBS was just adopted from this group into the verifiable credentials working group. So the selective disclosure and linkable signatures stuff. So we're going to have to make sure that we wrap that work up here and then transfer it over to that group. The other thing that was accepted is the credential schema 2022 work that Gabe just started in this group like 2 months ago, 3 months ago or whatever, but that's been accepted by the verifiable credential working group. And so we need to wrap that up and transfer it over. So just a heads up to the chairs and the community to look for, you know, those things migrating to verifiable credential working group in the next week or so. ECDSA was already moved over, Greg. So that happened 2 weeks ago or 1 week ago or something like that. So two more things moving over. And things moving to ITF. I think the community should be super happy that, you know, our stuff is absolutely being picked up by multiple different standard setting organizations at an increasing pace. That's it.
Thank you, Manu. And thanks everyone for the good work. Try any other updates on the work items? Okay, so I think let's get to the main agenda. So this week, again, we are very honored to actually have Mark and David to present and lead the discussion on evidence property. So Mark is the co-chair of OpenID Foundation's EKYC, Know Your Customer Working Group, and David has been a very active contributor on both W3C CCG as well as the OpenID Foundation. So we recently had some lively discussions on this topic recently, so I think it would be great if Mark and David to kind of provide a little background on it as well as to lead a discussion on this topic. So without further ado, Mark and David, please take it away. Thanks.
Thank you. We haven't prepared anything terribly formal here. David, I hope you don't mind me kicking off, but might be worth just sharing a little bit of the backstory of some of the stuff that we're proposing here. So in, I think, it was probably late 2019, there was a donation of a spec into the OpenID Foundation from a company called Yes.com, which was essentially a suggestion to extend OpenID Connect core with features to allow expression of the identity assurance metadata that went into the underlying establishment of the identity of the individual being presented at that point. And over the last, 2.5 years now, we've been refining and polishing that in all sorts of ways and trying to effectively take that and make it into something more generally usable by implementers. And it's a little orthogonal, or it's kind of neighboring to the normal activities of OpenID, or the OpenID core activities, which are about communicating attributes. This is more about defining a reusable schema for the identity assurance metadata, although there are some... Oh, sorry. It may be just that I'm in a slightly noisy place. I'll try holding the mic closer. Thanks for that comment. Hopefully that's a little better. Cool. So anyway, the point I was trying to make was that to some large degree, the work of the EKYC Identity Assurance Working Group under OpenID Foundation has been focused on the standardized schema for identity assurance. As part of that, I had this thought that a standardized schema would be usable elsewhere. And ultimately, David and I ended up talking about that. And we have produced a document that is at least a starting point for taking this schema and making it available in a verifiable credential under the evidence property. And I think that's kind of the short version. David, first of all, I don't know if there's anything that you'd particularly like to add. And then the second thing is discuss, ask questions, or what have you.
The only thing I can add is I presented this to the CCG as a new work item initially. And then the VC working group said they were also interested in it, but it didn't progress either as a work item in the CCG or as a work item in the VC working group. And then about 3 weeks ago, Mano introduced a directory of specifications of VC extensions. And so it seemed like this was a good place to document the evidence property. And so what I've done is I've documented it into the directory of VC specifications. So it's there now, publicly accessible by everybody to reference.
Just picking up on Kalia's comment, I believe, David, you've reached out to the OASIS group that's looking at a similar topic. And I think a suggestion of perhaps reusing the same or similar schema there?
Yeah, that's correct. The OASIS group have got a new work item. I think it's out for ballot. I'm not sure whether it's been accepted or not. But it has Kim Hamilton Duffy from this group as one of its proposed chairs. So there is a linkage there already with ourselves. And so I wrote to the chair and said, we've already got this evidence property, and if you're thinking of working in a similar area, then we'd like to work together. And we got a positive response from OASIS saying, yeah, they'd like to work with us. So hopefully we'll get one common standard rather than different competing ones.
So I don't know if... Oh, okay. Go for it, Manny.
Yeah, I guess the general question I have for... So one, it's great that both of you are working on an evidence property. It's a demonstration that this extension point in the verifiable credential data model is useful. So thank you to both of you for, you know, pushing that work forward. It's also, good that we can demonstrate that, you know, work can happen in other areas, as extensions to the verifiable credential data model. It doesn't all need to go through W3C. It doesn't all need to be in the working group. So that this is another good kind of demonstration that, we might have built something that, you know, can be extended in a decentralized way. I guess the understanding kind of the core use case that you're going after and who you believe the first set of kind of deployers for this technology are going to be would be helpful to kind of ground the discussion in, like, you know, who are the first set of customers for this extension point, and what problems do you feel it's going to address in the market, would certainly help me understand where this fits in the larger ecosystem.
Sure, Manu. I'm sorry I got disconnected just at the start of your response there. I'll deal with the last point, and then if there's something from the start I missed, then please let me know. When I'm thinking about the utility of this, it seems to me to be any use case where there's a need to express how the identity being communicated was assured. So it might be simply which trust framework under which that identity was assured from a process perspective, or it could go into all sorts of detail of process and evidence that was used in the assurance. In the little example that we've included there, it's one of the slightly richer ones. There's both details of how validation of the identity and verification of documents was done, along with communication of metadata about the documents that were used when performing the identity assurance process. That's a relatively rich example. I don't anticipate that a lot of use cases will need that level of fidelity, but quite a lot of the structure as defined in the spec we're doing over in OpenID Foundation is optional for that very reason, because it's not going to be needed in every use case. I don't know if that addresses your question, Manu. Hopefully it does.
Partially. The part that I think you might not have been here for is the deployment story. So who's going to deploy this first, and what's the driving use case for that? Like, specifically, you know, I think you mentioned, like, yes.com, who deals with, you know, banking and financial, you know, industry things. Do we know who the initial set of implementers and deployers are for this spec?
So the OpenID Connect version of this has got a few implementations at various stages of analysis and implementation. So I know that there's a identity scheme off the back of Payments Australia going on that's using a very simple version of this in their jurisdiction. There's a couple of projects in the UK looking at this in some detail, and they're going for a much richer, more high fidelity presentation of the identity assurance stuff. And actually, there's a project which I'm part of, which is thinking about using a version of this in the context of verifiable credentials as well. And that's relating to communicating assured identities in financial services in North America, I believe. There's also some work going on over in Japan around this, relating to government-issued identities as well. that last one is an OpenID Connect based analysis at this stage, as far as I understand it. I'm not too close to that one.
Any other questions or comments? Money, does that address your question?
It does. Thank you.
What I could add is to say that in the VC model, there is the concept that the verifier trusts the issuer, I trust the issuer. So anything the issuer says about the subject in the credential is trusted and is taken on merit. What the evidence property allows the verifier to do is to be more finely nuanced in its trust, to say, I'm not going to take everything just on trust, but I'm going to look for further evidence about what the issuer did, to see how much trust I can place in the credential that's been issued by this issuer. And so, of course, there's then trust in the evidence because, the issuer is saying what the evidence is, but it does allow this more finely nuanced measurement of trust so that there may be from the same issuer to two different subjects who've been proofed, if you like, in different ways, the verifier may decide, well, I'll trust the statements made about this subject, but I have less faith in the statements made about this other subject because the level of evidence is much lower in that particular case.
I may also add, so perhaps some examples would bring what David said to life. I've already mentioned briefly that we have a trust framework parameter in there to describe, you know, whether it's been done on a UK trust framework or, you know, under NIST or under EIDAS perhaps. But we also have a number of different optional parameters that add more fidelity to that. Things like the assurance level that the identity was established under. Certainly in the UK, we have a wide range of options for achieving an assurance level of a given value. And in some cases, the relying party or verifier in a VC world may wish to make decisions about access to service based on that finer-grained data. I know there are use cases under discussion in the UK where they're happy, you know, a relying party is happy to accept information about the end user. Providing knowledge-based verification was not used, so in order for them to take that decision, the assurance level itself is not granular enough, and we need to communicate some of the more nuanced factors into the communication to that relying party. So it really, I think, allows a flexible expression of all sorts of fine-grained details of identity assurance that may be needed by some relying parties. The other thing that may be worth adding at this point as well is I'm assured by people who know more about this than I do at the moment that we can apply things like SDJOT to this as well to allow for selective disclosure of all of this fine-grained detail, which I think should give some comfort that we're not just going to be, giving a fire hose of identity assurance data out to verifiers or relying parties.
So for some of us who are not familiar with the evidence property, what are some of the examples of the evidence properties and data fields?
So, Harrison, go on, Dennis. You can.
Yeah. So, at the VC level, the evidence property is an extension point where anybody can specify evidence, and this requires a type. So, the type must be a global unique URI, and then when a recipient gets the evidence, it can look at the type field and say, okay, this is what type of evidence it is. So, at the most simple level, what we've said is the type will refer to the OpenID Connect Identity Assurance standard. And so when you get the evidence property and you see the type refers to the OpenID Identity Assurance standard, you know that, okay, what's going to follow within this property is information from that standard. And so then you would go to the standard and look at what are the fields that standard allows. So it allows you to say, well, I'll go over to Mark to give more detail, but it allows you to say things like, I looked at the driving license and I got the name from the driving license was this. And I looked at the passport and I got the name from the passport was this. And in the example that we originally published, you could see that two different names were given because one might have been the pre-married, you know, the maiden name, and then the other one might have been the married name. And also, the addresses in different documents could be different as well, so the evidence could give different fields. So it's actually allowing potentially a very rich set of data to be given to the verifier to say, this is what I know about this person that I picked up from the following documents.
Got it. Thank you. Now, I have a follow-up question.
Sorry to butt in. Hold that question if you can. The other thing that I was just going to add is under the EKYC and Identity Assurance Working Group at the OpenID Foundation, we are discussing also profiling this spec so that we can define localized components. A lot of the structure of the verification element, which is the kind of key object, is optional and leaves a lot of room for expressing identity assurance levels and processes and evidence documents up to the implementer. And I think the next step of helping implementers deliver this in an interoperable fashion is to start providing ways for them to close down the options so that their verifiers and issuers can all agree on something which is reusable between them all. So I foresee things like the assurance details part of the spec, having profiles for NIST, for EIDAS, for GPG45 in the UK, so that we can pick and choose profiles that match those particular cases. I can also see having profiles for specific sorts of documents, like a UK driving license versus a US driving license versus an international driving license. And, you know, the huge array of other evidence types that may exist across the globe. I think that will become a resource which implementers use to close down the wide array of optionality that is going to be available within this verification element. So there we go. I don't know if that was the direction you were going, Harrison, but I think it's useful background, hopefully.
Got it. So essentially, like, the U.S. driver license will have its own profile and its own schema, and then the U.K. one will have another one. So it doesn't try to standardize the two different schemas into one. It'll just, it basically provides an extension that allows the issuers to kind of provide more evidences for identity assurance purposes, basically. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's my idea. So that, you know, two implementers who happen to use US driving license end up with the same parameter of names and range of values would be my goal, certainly. Clearly, I can't guarantee that everybody will follow it, but that's just the name of the game here, I think, isn't it? But clearly, there are differences in evidence documents across the world, and we need to be able to offer a way for them to be all reflected within the full range of the standard, but at the same time be interoperable whenever possible.
Got it. Thank you. Any other questions?
What was your question, Harrison?
Oh, no, I was just asking about the standardization across different formats, but I think you kind of answered it. Thank you.
Awesome.
Any other questions from the community? All right. So Mark and David, do you guys have any closing comments on this topic?
Well, I was just sitting here thinking, I haven't received a whole lot of feedback. I would be interested if people think this sounds like a valuable addition. And whether there's any, on the flip side, any concerns about this.
Got it. So if people have any feedbacks or comments, like how do they reach you?
LinkedIn is probably a good place to start. I'm very happy to share my email address as well. I'm also on a few Slack channels here and there, particularly under OpenID Foundation. I'll drop my email in chat.
Got it. Thank you. And I see a Smart Janice. You have a question?
Yeah, this is Steve. And I'm sorry, I may have missed this, but my primary question is, you know, when you're providing this evidence, is this something that is attested to by the issuer? Is that the general concept? Is it self-attested by the issuer?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
I mean, an improvement might be that there is an attestation by some other third party to what the issuer is saying, but then you're into the field of transitive trust rather than direct trust.
Yeah, and that's sort of my question, right? So the one issue is if I'm an issuer and I'm making some sort of authoritative statement, and then I have to provide additional information about why that authoritative statement is authoritative, I'm not seeing where there's added value to that, other than if you're more interested in what the process is that I as an issuer took to get there, right? So it's different from whether or not I should trust it. It's more, you know, kind of what process did I go through to get it?
Well, it could also be in the authorization decision making. So it could be used in a much finer grained authorization decision making model. So as you know, that if you're aware of hexacomal, that allows making decisions based on a whole bunch of fine-grained properties, and if you were taking things from the evidence to feed into the decision making,
I get the notion that it's evidence, which is good, can be used for decision making, but I don't see it as adding additional trust. So I'm kind of losing that aspect of it.
So I think there is an interesting little point here. For some context, this is providing us a link from the technology domain where we kind of may or may not have implicit trust in what's being stated to something I sometimes reflect on as being analogous to X509 in regard of, you know, you make a statement because there's a certificate presented, but attached to that certificate, contained in that certificate, is a link to the certificate policy, where the policy domain is expressed. And part of what we're doing here is providing, through the trust framework parameter, a link from the technology domain where we're saying, this is Mark Hain or whatever we're saying, to a world where there's some document somewhere that says Mark Hain was assured using this process. And then we're allowing fine-grained expression of aspects of that process to be expressed as well for that more fine-grained authorization decision-making into the bargain.
But again, all self-attested by the issuer.
Yeah, so generally what we'll see, I think, although, you know, time will tell, is that some of the trust framework stuff will be, you know, presented online in some form and link through to, you know, perhaps a review process by some other entity. So it could be that it's, the system has been reviewed for protocol compliance, or it's been reviewed for some cybersecurity requirements. I think there's maybe some crossover to perhaps some of the monitoring or review process stuff that the Kintara Institute are measuring on. So it's a bit more than just self-asserted. I think it's a pointer to those kind of policy and legal documents that underpin this stuff in some contexts.
Okay, thank you.
And generally speaking, there would be some audit of that, so that if the issuer is participating in some trust framework, there will be some audit function performed to make sure that it does what it says it does. So it says in the credential issues, this is what I've done, but then the auditor will actually be checking that they actually do what they say they do. The other thought that occurs to me when we're talking about this trust issue is that if the evidence, rather than saying I got the name and the details from the driving license, if that evidence was actually the digital driving license signed by that issuing authority, then you have increased the trust, because you've now got transitive trust, because you've got trust in the issuer of the driving license, as well as trust in the issuer of the verifiable credential that used the driving license to issue the verifiable credential.
Cool. Any other questions or comments? All right, David, any closing thoughts to bring us home?
It's still very early days, okay? So what we have done is said in the directory that this is the type you will use in order to understand it. What is needed now is some further work, as Mark said, via the profiles or some other refinement, because taking the IDA standard as a whole, it's obviously very complex, and there would be a lot of work to do for implementers to understand every field and every possible combination. So I think the next work is to sort of simplify it down to these profiles that Mark mentioned, which makes it then much easier for people to validate this stuff. And so we're thinking that within the type, there would be a subtype, which would be the profile. But that would be specified not in the directory and not in the main type of the directory, but when the document it points to, that would actually then contain the different subtypes, which would be the profiles.
Cool. And sorry, I have a follow-up comment. Like, have you guys looked into schema.org? Because I see a lot of potential overlap between these two initiatives. Yeah.
I did look at it quite a long time ago, yes, Harrison. It feels insufficiently well-defined to me, but that's just a very glib value judgment, I'm afraid.
Yep.
And also, it doesn't really give the opportunity for defining a structure. It's an attribute-by-attribute definition, I believe.
Yeah, the reason why I bring it up is because a lot of people implement schema.org simply because it's, I think it's the go-to standard for Google SEO. So everyone who does SEO had to follow schema.org. So if we could kind of collaborate, together and maybe even piggyback on top of schema.org, that will instantly give you a lot of traction because all websites who does SEO will basically have to adopt it. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. I think this concludes today's meeting. So, any other, comments or things that people want to bring up, or maybe there's, introductions or reintroductions that, we missed earlier? Okay. Cool. So I just want to thank you, Mark, and thank you, David, for jumping on and actually kind of lead this discussion and, answering questions. We'll end a little bit early today and, you know, have a good one, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Harrison.